In our studio is Carrie Kennedy. She is one of Bobby Kennedy's children, and her book is Robert F. Kennedy, Ripples of Hope. Welcome to our new studio. How are you?
It is so beautiful up here and so nice to be nice and cool and not boiling hot, even by the lake.
Yeah, were you guys outside?
Yes, of course.
The canyons of steel and concrete, it kind of microwaves it. It gets warmer and warmer on any given spot if you're in the sun. Well, we appreciate you coming up here. Ripples of Hope is your new book. It's a compendium of people we know and some that maybe we know about but don't know that well, and how your late father inspired them. Even 50 years later, his inspiration is still rippling through, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's pretty amazing because some of the people who I interviewed for the book knew my father well and worked closely with him. John Lewis, Harry Belafonte, Marion Wright Edelman, and others. But other people in the book have never met him. Van Jones, somebody like Tim Cook,
yeah.
Bono, George Clooney, and still they see him as their lodestar, as somebody who's really influenced their lives and their work on social justice.
I wonder why. Why does Bobby Kennedy resonate today?
Well, you know, I think he called forth the best in all of us, and I think that's a theme that keeps rippling through that book, is people just needed to feel called their best selves was what he was reaching out to. And I think also he had this extraordinary moral imagination. And that really saved us from nuclear annihilation during the Cuban Missile Crisis, because he was able to understand that even though Khrushchev was calling for war, he actually wanted peace, but that Khrushchev was being pressured by his own military-industrial complex, just as my uncle John Kennedy was being pressured by ours. And it was that same moral imagination which allowed my father to speak to a crowd in Indianapolis after Dr. King was killed, and urge them not to riot, but to come together as a country. And he said, what we need in the United States is not division and violence and lawlessness, but a sense of compassion towards those who suffer.
Back then, many people said then and still today that he was the only politician then that could talk to blacks and whites equally. Do you find that to be true?
Well, I think he was, and I think that he spoke to, you know, we were at a time, right now people feel like there's so much division in our country. You have to remember, in 1968, we had 125 cities burning on fire, not just for a night, but for weeks. Philadelphia was under basically martial law for weeks and weeks and weeks. And there were anti-war protesters, and they were pro-Johnson protesters.
We were fighting in Vietnam every day, for crying out loud.
Absolutely. So, and between young and old, black and white, rich and poor. So this is actually a good time to go back and look at 1968 and say, who were the leaders? What were they saying that were able to heal those divisions and bring us together? What are the lessons learned?
And so you write, Bobby's 1968 campaign, one that a reporter covering it called a huge, joyous adventure. It was that and more, and no presidential candidate since has run so passionately, or if you will, recklessly, or put poverty, justice, and human rights so squarely at the center of a campaign, or criticize the American people so brazenly. Try to imagine a politician now, your book says. This isn't your words. This is actually the preface that was written by, who wrote the preface on this?
Thurston Clark.
Thurston Clark. He wrote, try to imagine a politician now saying, as Kennedy did in a New York Times essay shortly before he announced his candidacy, once we thought, with Jefferson, that we were the best hope of all mankind, but now we seem to rely on our wealth and power. Or say, as Kennedy did on Meet the Press, I am dissatisfied with our society. I suppose I am dissatisfied with my country. Michelle Obama sort of went down that road briefly once upon a time and will to this day be criticized for it. Imagine somebody wanting to run for president and lobbying something like that out, as your father did.
Well, I think, you know, it wasn't just criticism. It was criticism, but combined with this extraordinary vision. So when Daddy ran for president, he said, peace and justice and compassion towards those who suffer. That's what the United States should stand for. And that's what I'll do if I'm elected president of the United States. So imagine a journalist saying to a presidential contender today, why are you running? And them saying, peace, justice, and compassion towards those who suffer. And yet, that's what our country is yearning for. Red and blue, black and white, you know, old and young, all of us want a country that's based on peace and justice and compassion.
Yeah. Your dad's great civil rights advocate, Carrie Kennedy's in our studio, and her book is a compilation of her recollections, but also the recollections of people you do and maybe don't know so well, talking about Bobby Kennedy. Robert F. Kennedy, Ripples of Hope is her book. And the book is just out. You talk in the book, I just mentioned this in the last hour briefly, but your dad was at the forefront of the civil rights movement, and it was very personal to him, it seemed. So much so that when you guys went on a ski trip as a family one time, I don't know if you can finish the story, you know,
yeah,
the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. We were up in Lake Placid, and, you know, I have seven brothers and three sisters. There's a big group of us, and at that time, my mother was home because she was pregnant. And we all checked into this hotel. There was a huge blizzard going on. My father had all the kids. My mother wasn't there. And we all got into the hotel rooms. And then he found out that that hotel discriminated. I can't remember if it was against blacks or Jews or somebody. And he went and got us all up, packed all our bags up. It's the middle of the night. It's like midnight. We've been campaigning all day. We get into cars and we go across the lake to this, you know, this no-tell motel. And that's when we all squish in together. But he always made everything be so much fun and such an adventure. There was no whining about it. It was just,
but he,
that's what we're
did
doing.
He told
next.
You, that's it. This hotel is not a hotel for us. We're out.
That's exactly right.
He made you guys memorize the charge of the Light Brigade.
Yes,
why?
He did. I was 6 years old at the time. Well, you know, he whenever he went on a trip, he would always leave a poem behind and challenge us to memorize that. But that was 1966. It was the height of the Vietnam War. President Johnson was saying that we could win that war by just sending in more troops, more people to die. And my father didn't believe that. And part of that's a poem about 600 men who ride into an ambush knowing that they're all going to be killed. And
what a nice thing for a six-year-old girl to learn while daddy's away on
business.
Well,
yes, exactly. But part of that poem says, theirs was not to reason why, theirs was not to make reply, all in the valley of death rode the 600. And he wanted us to question authority. He wanted us to grow up asking questions, you know, loving our country, being duty-bound, but always questioning authority.
He was away one time. No. The family went to visit him in his office. And he wrote you a note afterwards saying, it was so nice for you to come and visit me in my office. But I also want you to know it was a big day because today two black students were able to enroll at the University of Alabama.
Yeah, you know, it's that's an amazing letter and one of my most treasured
possessions. You still have that?
I do. I have it on my wall. But what's really interesting about it is I just watched the outtakes from a famous documentary by Drew Associates that was filmed that day.
Really?
And was filmed during the entire 10-day crisis. And in this documentary, there's a scene that takes forever, in which I'm let's say, 4 years old, and I'm playing hide-and-go-seek with my brothers. And my father is saying, hotter, colder, hotter, colder. And you're watching this four-year-old, you know, look for my brothers in the office. And the camera pans down underneath the desk. You see the two boys hiding. And then you hear his voice and my voice. And finally, I duck under the desk and find them. And you're going crazy when this is going on, saying, what is he doing? Why isn't he paying attention? We're talking about sending troops into Alabama. And what comes out of it is, this is an incredible portrait of leadership. It's not that the children are a distraction. It's that the children are the reason for having that beautiful, compassionate, loving way of handling a crisis. And it makes you think, my gosh, we need more children and more offices, and we should not be discriminating against women who are pregnant and having children. We should be inviting them to every office in this country, because we're going to make better decisions if we're thinking about the people who those decisions will impact.
Carrie Kennedy's in our Skyline studio, downtown Chicago. She's talking about her father, Bobby Kennedy, from 219, How We Need Him Now. Let's pause here for just a minute and come back and tell me some of the stories of what you say about what Tony Bennett says is so resonant today. Tony Bennett and how your dad influenced him, or what he thinks about him. The George Clooney piece is really interesting. The Joe Biden piece is so touching. So just tell us a couple of those stories in a minute on WGN. In our studio is Carrie Kennedy, daughter of Robert F. Kennedy. His her book about him is Ripples of Hope. If you do not have this, get this. It is a very anecdote-filled book where a lot of famous people tell stories about how Bobby Kennedy affected them or influenced them, either because they knew him or because they tried to live by some of his ideals. Tony Bennett and your dad are connected how?
So Tony Bennett tells this amazing story. He campaigned for my father in 1968 and also 64 when Daddy was running for senator of New York. But he tells this incredible story about growing up in abject poverty in Queens, New York. And his mother would take in sewing. And whenever she got a dress she didn't like, she'd throw it on the floor and say, that's a low-quality dress. And so when he became a singer, the studios would ask him to play sort of modern songs, and he'd say, no, I'm not going to sing any low-quality songs, which is why today every Tony Bennett song you hear is a classic. You could have listened to it 50 years ago or today. But he tells this amazing story about he was always a pacifist. And
he fought in the Battle of the Bulge.
Exactly. He was sent to the German front during World War II. He wouldn't pick up a gun. The Allies won that battle. He marched into the next town and came across a Nazi death camp. And Tony Bennett emancipated all of those people. Then he comes back to New York. He's, you know, top of the charts. He's asked by Harry Belafonte to go down to Selma and march with Dr. King. He does that. He gets involved with my father's campaigns. And then I asked him about his more recent career. And I talked to him about the Super Bowl. And he said, yes, I sang at the Super Bowl. Big honor. And I said, so what'd you sing? He said, well, I didn't sing any low-quality songs. I said, oh, like the national anthem? And he said, well, you know, I don't want anything that glorifies war. So I sang America the Beautiful. Now, you cannot find somebody who's a bigger patriot than Tony Bennett. But he wasn't going to sing that song. And I have to say, it reminded me again of my dad, who said that if he became president, he would change our national anthem to This Land Is Your Land, for exactly the same reason.
One other quick story. George Clooney won the Kennedy Lifetime Achievement Award. It's called the
Ripples of Hope
Ripples
Award.
Of Hope Award.
Exactly.
What's the Clooney story?
So George Clooney was 8 years old. His father was a local television personality in Cincinnati on the local news. And after my father was killed, his father and they grew up in a Catholic family said, well, so what do you think you should do about it? And George said, well, I don't know. Maybe we should give something up, like we give it up for Lent. And his father said, okay, so what do you want to give up? And George was like, well, I love cowboys and Indians. And he thought, he said, I'll give up my guns. And he was thinking like for a day. And his father said, oh, that's great, George. And then his father went on television the next day and said, I'm so proud of my son, George. He's giving up guns forever. And George is like, no, wait, what? And then he went to school the next day and his teacher brought him in front of the class and said, good, George is giving up his guns forever. Everybody should be like George. And then the woman who checked him out of the grocery store said, oh, I'm so proud of you, George. You're giving up your guns forever. And so he said that experience was so traumatizing to him. he's never survived the guilt of it.
But that's it. That's only traumatizing because he's a Catholic. Other people might think, oh, great, I'll take that. But a Catholic would feel, no, I'm getting praised for something that I don't deserve.
Exactly.
Even in this good deed, I found a way to commit a sin. And so now I have to do some sort of penance for it.
Exactly.
And so then, if I may, he then decides that he is not going to put a pebble in his sandal, but what does he do as his lifelong penance?
Well, part of it is he actually fills his shoes with pebbles and jumps off the top of his...
This is a little kid going, yeah. All right, I will... This is how hard Catholicism can
used
be.
To be.
Here's a kid volunteering to put rocks in his feet and then jump off the bed to hurt himself so that he'll know that he has sinned. That's his penance.
Well, yeah. But I mean, his sort of long-term reflection on it is, that's why I'm involved in Sudan today, and you need to be too. So I hope everybody will, you know, go out there and work for social justice and human rights. And that's why we all love George Clooney.
I don't care who the president is, but right now Donald Trump is. And this book, I think, is just so thoughtful and reflective and necessary. And I think healing. And I think everybody should read it, regardless of their political persuasion, and just appreciate the possibilities of hope. The book is titled Ripples of Hope. Robert F. Kennedy. It's written by his daughter, Carrie Kennedy, who then got all of these famous people. And, you know, we shouldn't dwell on the celebrities. We're out of time now. I asked you to talk about Tony Bennett, and I asked you to talk about George Clooney. But not all of them are celebrities in that realm. But they all have very interesting and thoughtful things to say about your father. Well done.
Thank you so much.
What an interesting set of stories.